Hi, my name's Courtney Doctor, and I'm the Director of Women's Initiatives at the Gospel Coalition. My friends and I lovingly refer to the women we see once a year at TGCW as our camp friends, because the time we enjoy together at a conference feels just like a week at camp. And I want to encourage you to invite your camp friends, the people you want to sit beside as you listen to great teaching, worship, stay up late chatting about theology and life, and just have fun. And if you don't have camp friends to bring, come and meet some new ones. The final price increase is on May 8th. This is your last chance to save on your registration. Sign up at tgcw24.org. I really hope to see you there. That's tgcw24.org.
Are you looking for an accessible way to grow as an intern or pastor? Reformed Theological Seminary offers a hybrid Master of Divinity, allowing those in ministry to deepen their theological understanding without leaving their current position or relocating their families. Under the guidance of esteemed Reformed Evangelical instructors, students gain experience in both theoretical and practical aspects of ministry, with a blend of online and in-person courses. At RTS, you'll deepen your love for God as you prepare to serve the church. To learn more, visit rts.edu/gospelbound and receive a complimentary book for a limited time. That's rts.edu/gospelbound.
Welcome to Gospelbound, a podcast from the Gospel Coalition for those searching for resolute hope in an anxious age. I'm your host, Colin Hansen, and each week I'm joined by insightful guests to talk about their written work and how the gospel applies to all of life. Together, we keep looking until we see God working. Wherever you're listening, welcome. I'm glad you're here for today's conversation. I remember asking Tim Keller why he never wrote a book with his wife, Kathy, about parenting. After all, they wrote one of the most helpful books on marriage, The Meaning of Marriage. I interviewed them twice for this podcast, Gospelbound, and they're among the most popular episodes among listeners of all time talking about marriage. So why didn't they write the book? Well, I didn't feel like they'd been very good parents, despite how their three boys turned out. The boys have families, they're in church, one of them even followed in his dad's footsteps as a pastor. The Kellers looked at friends, though, and thought that those friends had actually been better parents, but they didn't see necessarily the same positive results from their own children. And the Kellers then didn't think they could give parenting counsel that would deliver what so many of us in the end want, which is assurance that our kids will turn out okay. Now, Melissa Krueger, in her new book on parenting, does not promise that our kids will turn out okay. But I can definitely say that this book, Parenting with Hope, Raising Teens for Christ in a Secular Age, reflects so much of what I admire about her and her husband, Mike. She grounds us with hope in the gospel. We can trust God with our kids, that his purposes can never be thwarted. And she grounds us with wisdom, that we can grow in our parenting to better help our children flourish. Now, Melissa serves as Vice President of Discipleship Programming for the Gospel Coalition. She is the author of many books, including Walking with God in the Season of Motherhood, Growing Together, Taking Mentoring Beyond Small Talk and Prayer Requests, Wherever You Go, I Want You to Know, and His Grace is Enough. By the way, a lot of different genres of books there that Melissa contributes to, and a lot of different audiences. Now, I know we have a lot of women who listen to and watch Gospel Bound, and I want you to make sure to know you can hear Melissa when you register for the Gospel Coalition's 2024 Women's Conference, June 20th to 22nd in Indianapolis. She'll be recording a live Risen Motherhood podcast with Emily Jensen and Laura Wiffler there, among other responsibilities. Melissa is probably our most popular guest on Gospel Bound. No pressure, Melissa. And she returns for the first time ever on Gospel Bound. I say you're a guest, but actually, Melissa, you're always the interviewer on Gospel
Bound.
I know.
I don't know how to be here without interviewing you.
So now you get to answer all of my questions on parenting. So thanks for joining me yet again, Melissa. And maybe for once, we will keep this podcast under 90 minutes. But I am not so sure because I got a lot of questions.
We will try. We'll do better.
We'll try. All right. First question, Melissa, were you scared to write a book on parenting?
Terrified. Absolutely terrified. In fact, the publisher came to me asking, would I do this? And I told them no. And I just said, no, I don't think that's for me. It's too close. I'm just out of this season. And felt a lot of peace about that. And then they came a year later and asked again. And so, and there were 8 people on the call. So basically you could say I was pressured. I was peer pressured into writing this book. But I would say what I was, I'm a big person. I always try to write what's not there. I have no, you know me, I have no desire for extra work. And so when I did look around is I said, wow, there's nothing for the mom of teens that I could find, especially in our circles. And I was a high school teacher. A lot of these things I realized, I did actually in these child teen development classes, there were some things I had learned that were really helpful when I got to my own teens. That you kind of forgot you had learned along the way. And so I was hoping to pass some of those along as well.
And what did your kids think?
They were like, why are you doing this, Mom? Don't do this. Don't do this. What are you doing? You're not going to tell our stories, are you? And I promised I was not going to tell their stories. I was going to tell my story of being a teen parent. But they have actually been incredibly gracious to me to let me do this. And my daughter read it, and my youngest read it. She's 17. She's still at home. And she read it. And she said, now I understand some of the things you're doing when you're talking to us. So, it's been fun. They've been actually very supportive as we've talked about things we do. And they've actually been very insightful as they look at other families in our community. And say, yeah, it doesn't go well in this situation. I mean, they're paying attention too and had a lot more insight than I expected.
Do you think that a mother could actually read this book with her teens? I mean, I know that's not the primary use of it, but would that be plausible?
That's a great question. I think it'd be pretty interesting. I think what it can help the teenager realize is, you know what? Your parent is doing this for the first time too.
Oh.
And so perhaps it could lead to a little bit of openness. You know, I think often as parents, we feel like we're supposed to be the experts, but you know, every oldest child is your first time you're going through it. And so you never really get to feel like you're a parenting expert because you're always learning. I'm currently learning what it's like to be the parent of a child who's getting ready to get married. You know, we're always learning along the way as we parent our children.
Now, I mean, I hadn't thought about that going into this interview, that possibility, but that is an interesting thing maybe to help our children be a little more sympathetic that we don't have all the answers, that we have to learn along the way, just as they do. We're continuing to grow up as we learn new experiences there with them. When somebody finishes this book, Melissa, what do you want them to think and what do you want them to feel?
Yeah, I want them to think there are active means of grace that I can employ in my parenting that really have nothing to do with my teenager. So I want them to think about that, and I want them to leave hopeful that they can cling to those when they don't know what to do with their teenager. They can run to what the Bible instructs us are means of grace, meaning word, prayer, church. They can run to those things. They can place their hope in those things. I can't change my child, but I can pray. Yeah, there's always something to do, right? I mean, I when we don't know what to do, we can beg the Lord for his help. So I hope that they will employ the means of grace God has given us and use those more readily and fight our battles as parents in those ways rather than thinking, I've got to try to figure out how to control my teen, which is very hopeless because, you know, if we try to control anyone, we're going to fail. Whether it's your spouse, whether it's your boss, whatever, we're going to fail. But to think about those means of grace and to be hopeful.
Now I'm pretty lucky in that I don't have teen children, but I've benefited a lot from your advice and talked with you a lot and learned a lot and picked up a lot of things just thinking about when my kids get older. One of the things that you've talked with me about early in the process of conceiving this book, I think, was the difference between authoritative and authoritarian parenting. It's pretty important in your book. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, I mean, when you developmental psychologists or sociologists, I mean, they'll talk about different styles of parenting. And these have been in the books for, you know, since I was back when I was in college. So at least 30 years. I don't know how long ago I was in college. So when it comes to parenting, we often just think there are two parenting styles. We think there's permissive or we think there's authoritarian. And we miss this other category called authoritative, which studies have shown along the way is the healthiest type of parenting that leads to the best outcomes. So some distinctions between authoritarian and authoritative. They sound very similar, so it can be confusing. Authoritarian is a little bit of the old school my way or the highway. It's high expectations, but low warmth. So there's very little discussion. There's very little conversation. It's just you can't date until this age because that's my rule and we're not going to really talk about it very much. Whereas authoritative is a little bit more, it still has high expectations, but it has higher degrees of warmth. So it's going to be a type of parenting that is going to engage more conversation. Again, when you're raising a two-year-old, it's totally fine to be like, you're not running in the street. And I'm not really explaining why. You're just not running in the street. Mm-hmm. But when you have teens, you do want to start engaging them in right thinking. Because guess what? In like 3 years, they're going to be making all of their own right or wrong thinking without you. Mm-hmm. So you want to invite them into the hows and whys. You want to ask good questions. It doesn't mean you don't have standards. You still have standards as an authoritative parent. But the way you go about expressing and communicating those standards is going to be very different than an authoritative parent. Authoritative parent, this is it. I'm not going to discuss it. These are the rules. Authoritative parent is going to say, let's have a conversation. Let's talk about the whys. And they might even budge. I'm not talking about scriptural boundaries. Scriptural boundaries we all call firm. But what I am talking about are, as a parent, each of us has to make curfew decisions. Each of us has to make, you know, decisions about what we're going to purchase for our kids, whether we're going to let them have a cell phone, whether we're going to, you know, send them to this school or that school. There are a lot of places in parenting that we have to make decisions that it's really wise to engage and involve our teenager. Not determinatively, like they don't get to make all the calls, but we have a conversation.
Yeah, again, I just think that distinction is very helpful. And I see a little bit more of that in my kids, but spanning from 9 to 2, yeah, big difference in there.
You're right there, 9-year-old. You're right there. Yeah. Gosh.
We're getting close. We're getting close.
Other people's kids grow up so much faster than your own.
That's true. Very true. It's kind of like watching students come through a graduate school or undergraduate school. You're like, you just got here. How did you graduate now?
They're like, it's been torture. What are you talking about? It's
been 4 years of agony. Like, yeah. I don't know. You just showed up. All right, so thinking about teens, again, that's the primary focus here, parenting with hope, raising teens for Christ in a secular age. What is the best advice you ever received from someone on parenting teens?
Wow, that's a good question. I haven't been asked that before. I'm probably going to change it. I mean, I think the best advice I've ever received on parenting is to be prayerful. I mean, like when I actually get down to it, I know I just said it, but there's just nothing better than being prayerful. I would say practically, one thing I say a lot to myself is just bite your tongue. Just let it pass and have the discussion later. So if I were going to give advice, it would be let it pass, have the discussion later. Here's the difference. When you have a two-year-old, you get into habits. You need to actually discipline right away because you can't have the conversation later. So that makes complete sense. As the parent of a teenager, when they come in hot, it's time for you to bring the temperature down. And so sometimes you just let a moment of complete disrespect, you just let it pass. And you say, okay, there's something going on with them. That was not appropriate how they just responded to me, but it doesn't need to be dealt with now. It can be dealt with in 30 minutes. It can be dealt with, you know, in an hour. And that type of bite your tongue and have the conversation later can probably go a long way.
So you don't match hot with hot. You've got to match hot with cold in those cases. Which is another one of those things where, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, I said, I call that being the parent.
Yeah.
You know, we match hot with hot when it's a peer in some sense, or, you know, you're in a debate, but you're the parent. So I'm the example. Yeah. And so I'm trying to actually teach them how to moderate their emotions. And you know what? You may be completely ticked off as a parent how they come in hot with you. They will come in and they will blame you for every mistake in your life, in their life. And you're thinking, it's not my fault you didn't get your homework done until now or whatever. You know, you could be defensive, but it doesn't really accomplish much is what I would say. And sometimes they just need a place to lose it. It's not right. It's not accepting of the behavior. It's just saying, I'm going to absorb that and we'll have a conversation about it later. And it normally goes a lot better that way.
Well, I think it's why Paul Tripp's advice on parenting has been very helpful to me, that your response is about you, not about your kids. Because that's why the response often when they come in hot is to say, how dare you? And then it's the appeal to authority ultimately. And then it's, but that does, especially with teenagers, as you're talking about here, that doesn't seem to go very well. Like you said, being the parent means controlling your response and finding the best way to be able to communicate about the, you know, what's happened there and to deal with what's right and what's wrong. What is the worst advice you've gotten as a parent?
It would probably come alongside the, I can't believe you let your kid do X, Y, or Z.
Oh,
because what's inherent in that is that we have control over X, Y, and Z with our kids. And some of it's just our typical parental judgment of other people. And this happens a lot in the young years, but it continues through the old years until, I mean, you're sending your kid in shorts at 31 degree weather. And you would probably even say about yourself, I can't believe you let your kid go to school in shorts in 31 degree weather. But you know what you've realized at that point? It's not a battle worth having. And so kind of that, whatever it might be, I can't believe you let your kid do whatever, that kind of just, maybe that's not advice. Maybe that's just judgment from other parents. I would just steer clear of those people, because normally they're not going to have the best advice. They're going to have a lot of rules with that, maybe out wisdom. And so I always get concerned when I hear that kind of thought, rather than being curious, hey, why do you do this in your home? Is there a reason? That's a very different, a different way to approach even a younger parent. Yeah, so if you're looking for wisdom, I look for the even the older parents who are curious rather than, condemning. Maybe that's a comparison word to use.
Well, Melissa, you're mentioning here the role of community. We do this where we see what other people do. We know that people see what we do. We're making evaluations, sometimes judgments. Your subtitle of the book, Raising Teens for Christ in a Secular Age, how has the church helped you raise teens in a secular age?
Yeah, I am so thankful to have really had a great community around me from birth, you know, up through the teen years. Just other parents that you can talk to about faith, but even some older parents just a few years, a few stages ahead of me. One of my mentors actually had the exact same lineup. She had a girl, boy, girl. And when I would get in the car with her to go on a retreat, I came question ready, because what I knew about her kids was they actually still liked being around their parents. Even when they were struggling, even when they were having seasons of, you know, doubts about Christianity or whatever, there was still an open door with the parents. And so I would ask her, I'd get in the car and say, what did you do to create a home like that? Why do your kids still want to talk to you? Tell me what you did, you know? And so having people one stage ahead of us who can still remember that stage? Because honestly, I'd be terrible with like an 18-month-old mom right now. I can't remember what you do or what.
It is amazing what you forget.
Yes.
It is really amazing what you forget. Yeah.
But like one stage ahead and then come with your questions. Because everybody has different questions. And I found that to be a huge part. But also having peers who you can just discuss different issues with. I will say this about the teen years, though. That can become a lot harder. When you have two-year-olds, everyone can talk about and laugh about the situation at Target when your kid's having a tantrum and you're carrying them out. And you're like, oh, my goodness, it was so embarrassing. Mm-hmm. We've all had those moments. In the teen years, it starts to be your kid's story. And, you know, so there are things my kids have struggled with that I don't talk about with anyone. And so it's a different reality because it's not just your story anymore. And so it can be harder to find people to talk to. But there are great ways you can do that. And I've actually found older people a little bit easier to do that with. And so I would say, but what you can always have is people who are praying, even when they don't know, just like, hey, my daughter's struggling through an issue right now. I can't talk about it, but will you just pray for her? And we can do that for each other, even when we can't explain. And I do just want to say, don't assume everyone's parenting world is just perfect. I think a lot of my friends, I've been on the inside of a lot of discussions with people who are going through heart-wrenching things in the teen years. And so don't assume, oh, it's all great over there. It might not be. And so that's why we really do need each other. And we need not to make those assumptions, because if you make that assumption, it can really prevent community, because you think no one understands me. And they might not understand your particular situation, but they can understand this is really hard. You don't know what to do. And we're going to cry out to the Lord together.
What's different, Melissa, about, let me rephrase that. I was going to ask you what's different about parenting in a secular age compared to the time and place where you grew up. I'm going to change that. What's the biggest difference in parenting in a secular age compared to the time and place where you grew up? I mean, for you and me both, and any number of people watching and listening right now, there are untold differences. So what's the first that comes to mind? What do you think is the biggest difference?
The first that comes to mind is definitely the influence of the cell phone. You know, and this isn't just a secular age. Maybe this is in an electronically always connected age. I mean, so it's broader than even just secularism, but the amount of information and the world that is on our cell phones that is accessible to a young child at a young age is pretty overwhelming. And pretty shocking what people have access to that they just wouldn't have had access to. I mean, you know, like when we were growing up, to be quite honest, I'll be very frank here because I just had this conversation last night with someone. For me to have seen a pornographic image, and it would have been a still image, I mean, that would have had to be in my home. You know, I couldn't have just stumbled upon it. And I was talking with a friend last night, and she was talking about a dating relationship she had with a guy. And he, at age 7, she's younger than me, clearly, because, at age 7, the guy had stumbled upon pornographic images of men together. And so that had caused him to question his sexuality for the rest of his life. And that had caused them to have struggles in dating. So this is where it went. I mean, like that just wasn't a part of my experience growing up. No one stumbled upon these images at age 7, in most of our experience. And so it's just huge, the things. And it's not just that, it's questions about all sorts of things that they can easily find online and voices who are, contradicting what you might be trying to teach. So it's a completely different world in that sense.
On our staff at TGC, we've got a lot of people who have teens or have had teens and are working through these things. And it's not a coincidence that we've aligned a lot of the help that we try to provide alongside what we're studying and what we're learning. And so if you look at the recorded podcast, which anybody can still go out there and download and watch those episodes hosted by Sarah Zylstra, you saw that we did one episode focused on college age women and younger, especially with smartphones. And then second, we also did one on teen boys and college age boys on video games. And it's important to note that everybody knows a smartphone is different because you and I didn't have those when we were in high school. But video games we did have when we were in high school, but they're not the same. They're very different. They're much more immersive. The internet connectivity really changes things when it comes to video games in there. The next episode that Sarah Zylstra and I have been talking about, this is normally when I talk with Melissa on Gospel Bound, we're giving a little bit of a preview toward the future. The latest one that I've talked with her about is travel sports, which is another major change. Like the
huge,
just the amount of travel, the amount of expense, the amount of pressure, the amount of specialization, all that. Now, Sarah also has written quite a bit about classical schools. Just another thing that's changed is the secular assumptions of public schools have sort of furthered. You know, you and I both grew up in fairly conservative areas, you know, in the grand scheme of things, in public schools. And there were still a number of assumptions there that are not there now, no matter where you go in a lot of different spots there. And so, of course, Christian schools, classical schools, things like that, homeschooling, of course, a lot of different good alternatives out there have arisen. So I just wanted to point out that we're thinking about these things and later this season on Gospel Bound, most likely to wrap up the first season of 2024. We'll see about that. But we've got Jonathan Haidt who'll be talking about his book, The Anxious Generation, focused teenagers, young adults, especially with the causes of anxiety. I also just noticed there's a new book by Abigail Scharrer out on this same topic of anxiety. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of good folks who are building on this, but what I love, Melissa, about what you do here is you root this thing in hope, and as you've mentioned here many times, you bring it back to prayer. So let me ask this. When you're praying for your kids, Melissa, you're alone in the dark in a dark morning on the back porch, how do you cling to God with hope? Is there a truth you meditate on? Is there a passage you pray? Are you waiting on some kind of assurance, a sense of assurance or comfort from the Lord? What's it like?
Yeah, you know, one thing I actually use is a resource I created. I did not come up with this. Good Book Company has a series called Five Things to Pray. And it's five things to pray for your church, five things to pray for your workplace, five. You know, they have all these different ones. And they had actually asked me to write five things to pray for your kids. And I still use it. That's what I'm going through. And what it does is it just leads you through scripture. So sometimes, you know, I was in a rut just praying, Lord, bless my children. Lord, let my children have faith. Lord. Yeah. And those are great prayers. I mean, goodness, if we're going to go anywhere, that one, starting with Lord, let my kids have faith, that's a great place to pray. But what I love about Five Things to Pray for Your Kids is it just leads you through a lot of different scripture for a lot of different things. So, for instance, this morning, I was actually using it to pray for my kids. And the prayer I was praying for them was about strength and courage when they're fearful and anxious. That was what the passage led me to pray. And, you know, it wasn't like there was a presenting issue for each of my kids today. But what I did was take that scripture and I used it to help me pray for each of them in something that they might even be fearing, you know, or whatever. And so I just applied it in that way. So I'm a big believer in praying scripture back. I think also just praying the Lord's Prayer. Goodness, what if we really started every day? One, you remember our Father. Okay, guess what? You as a parent are still a child. And so you get to have your father who you can call on. Sometimes I feel like that, don't you? Like, I'm so tired of the weight of everything being on me. I wish I had someone I could take everything to and feed me and put on my socks and help me get dressed, you know, all this stuff. Actually, he calls us, he says, pray to our Father, and then who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. May you be glorified today in my parenting. May you be glorified today in our family. Your kingdom come, your will be done. You know, not, I really want my kid to make the football team. I really want my kid to make the soccer team. Actually, let me hold it loosely before you and say, Lord, will you do what's best for my team? Because I don't even know what's best for my team. Forgive us our debts is a great place to pause and say, do I need to apologize for my team for anything? Have I sinned against them? Do I need to go before them and own my own behavior? Do I need to forgive them for anything? Am I holding a grudge because of something they've done and not walking in forgiveness? You know, again, these things that we've prayed a million times, we can apply them to our families, and what a rich blessing that can be.
I love that. Now, raising teens has changed a lot, even between your oldest and youngest daughter. We know things in 2024 that we didn't know in 2014. Would you change anything going back?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I was completely clueless about smartphones and social media. So with my daughter at 13 asked, could she have Instagram, maybe even 12? I was like, sure, you know, it's just sharing pictures. Well, how convenient is this? Rather than having to print them and pass them around like we used to do in middle school, there's this little app called Instagram. Great, share your pictures with your friends. I had no idea it would become this marketing tool, but also this like and unlike thing. You can't imagine, it's hard enough as a teenager to realize you didn't get invited to a party. Well, now, not only did you not get invited, you see them all posting about it. What's that going to do to a teenager heart? Yeah, like those things, I just didn't even know. And this is where part of the hope comes in. And I've told you this story before. That same daughter, I didn't know the harm. The Lord knew the harm. And we were at church one Sunday in her teen years, and she heard a sermon from a visiting pastor on not wasting your life. It had nothing to do with social media. This is before everyone was aware. He said not one word about social media. She got in the car and said, yeah, I just deleted Instagram. I think it's a waste of my time. And so I'm like, again, the means of grace, the word preached, it has real power to act in ways that we don't know how the Lord will act. And so I just, again, want to say one of the best things you can do for your teen is to take them to church. I mean, we're suffering from a crisis of isolation, a crisis of loneliness, a crisis of anxiety. And the studies have shown the benefits of weekly religious service is for teens on those very things. Things like anxiety and mental health are improved just by going to a weekly religious service every week. What we know to be true in scripture is proven true as we look at common grace insights of studies that have been done by even non-Christians who can see these things.
Well, what you said right there is related then also to what I mentioned about the youth sports that we're discussing in there, because just because somebody is offering something to your kids that sounds good and might be good in some ways does not mean that they have your children's best interests at heart. And sometimes as a parent, you don't know either. And so that's where the prayer comes in, but also just an awareness of the scope and the scale of some of those things. So if you had known, I mean, the Lord provided, but it was also helpful to know some more things about what was happening with smartphones. Smartphones, video games, travel sports, things like that. It's interesting. I think, Melissa, you mentioned earlier that you were a teacher. It's pretty amazing when I go back and I see my kids in elementary school, and you realize that if you're not a teacher, the only frame of reference you have is your own school growing up. And that does not tell me a lot about the situation today. I don't learn a lot. I mean, so much has changed in there that I realize I don't know exactly what I'm dealing with. And so I can only imagine what that's like then when you're raising teens, you're thinking back to your own experience. You don't have the paradigms necessarily to understand a lot of the differences of what's happening there. So along those lines, you know that my youngest son is 2. What should I be doing and praying now that can help him as a teen?
You know, I think the biggest thing you can do is create a warm home environment. All of the basic building blocks of society starts with the family. And so in a lot of ways, living like Christians in the home helps them with every relationship they'll have. You know, look, I have made so many mistakes as a parent. I had to call my daughter, you know, a couple of weeks ago. This is my adult daughter. And I called her back and said, hey, I'm so sorry for how I said that critical thing. It just wasn't helpful. It wasn't needed. I'm really sorry that I said it. So I would say practice getting really good at apologies and owning your own behavior. Like that's the place I'd start, even with my 2-year-old. Because here's what I found. My kids all know how to apologize. And they all give quick apologies. And they all own their behavior. And they own their behavior with each other. And what it does is set the basis for the type of people they will be attracted to be friends with, they're just not going to put up with certain behaviors. I would say the best defense for peer pressure for teens is a strong family unit where they know that they are loved, that they know that they are accepted for who they are. And what I mean by that is not accepted in their sin, but accepted that maybe you're a musical family and they're not musical. Maybe you're a sports family and they're not sporty. And you still love them because of who God made them to be. And that this is a home of grace where when mistakes are made, we look to the gospel and we look to Christ and we say, hey, we love you. We're gonna help you in this mistake. The family unit can have a profound impact on the world around us. And I think we're so excited to go and make disciples. And that begins in the home, and that can affect cities, can affect neighborhoods and cities and the whole world around as we create loving and warm and affectionate homes. And so I say those 2-year-olds, all those hugs you give, all those books you read, all of those, you know, smiles of delight. Wow. I mean, to me, that's culture making, and that's going to change the world as we do that well.
I had a fun moment recently. I was lecturing here at Samford University on Tim Keller, and there was a Q&A session, and we started talking about the same things that I opened this podcast with. We started talking about parenting, and I mentioned one of Tim's sons saying that the most important thing my dad did was he apologized to me when he was wrong, when he was in sin. I mentioned that to the group, and afterward, my older son came up to me and he said, "Dad, you do that too." And I was like, "Well, I have plenty of occasions to do so, unfortunately." But it was just good to see that there's some of that recognition, and I'm not going to say it's easy. Usually with the way I work, I think that I'm right in the moment, and then I realize that I'm not afterward, because I match the hot with hot. That's one of my biggest problems. And so what you were talking about earlier. So that's usually where I end up having to apologize there, because my own emotions just kind of run away and I don't quite realize it and catch it in the moment. And there's not a lot that's deeper, you know, and runs hotter than relationships with your kids. Right. And if any of us wonder about that, I don't think anybody does, but we just have to remember our own parents and what that felt like for us. I've got just a couple more questions here. You know, your 3 kids are so different from each other. So are mine. What is constant, Melissa, in your parenting, and what needs to change from child to child?
Yeah. What's constant in my parenting is being curious about who God's making them to be. I can say, wow, it's so much better to go into parenting open-handed and say, who have you given me, Lord? And seeing each child as kind of a gift to be, to get to know, rather than a product to be curated. I think there's a lot of curating of children going on, rather than a lot of enjoyment of them going on. And so to really look and say, who's God made you to be? How do I get to be a part of that? What a gift. I mean, what an absolute gift to get to be a part of that. And then with each child, it's going to change. There's going to be different ways that we have to discipline different kids and instruct different kids. But what that's going to look like isn't even all that different, even when the kids are really different, if you're doing the first thing, which is delighting in who God made them to be. I would say the principles haven't changed very much. The practice may have changed, but not basic principles. Those have really remained the same: to be curious, to ask a lot of questions, to be available, to listen well. Those things have gone across gender, have gone across way different personalities, and an ability to kind of not take yourself so seriously is really helpful in parenting teens.
Well, I think, Melissa, that there's another trend we haven't discussed here yet, but that I've covered a lot in other interviews, especially earlier this year with Brad Wilcox. But I wonder if the curated children phenomenon is connected to having fewer kids.
Yes.
Because if you had 5, 6, 7 or more kids and they were all the same and they were all just like you, that would strike everybody as wrong, odd and wrong. But if you have one child or even two children, I think there is this sense that they're kind of reflections of me, and extensions of me. And I need to ensure that I need to sort of control those outcomes, mm-hmm. not just as a reflection to me, but because I have a sense of sort of, I don't know, a misguided sense of control. I think it's similar to, we didn't know if we were going to have any kids. We didn't know if we were going to have one child. This is just how the Lord blessed us, especially having to start later for a variety of reasons. But it's amazing what I would think about parenting if I had one child versus three.
Yeah.
Because I would think that what I do has a certain outcome. And I would go back and I'd say, oh, this is this way because I did this, or this is this way because I did this. The more kids you have, and I think especially when you get to three, there's like a tipping point where you think, yeah, I'm not in control of as much of this as I thought.
You start
I
to
was.
Think, did I do anything? Did I do anything that impacts you? And what I will say is, here's what I will say. It's kind of like the bones. Their bones are who they are. We probably don't do a lot on certain things. What I would say is we're teaching them how to do the things the Lord, like, so in some ways, we want them to do it with love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and self-control, like the fruit of the Spirit as we are living that before them. We're not going to really change, is my kid amazing at math because we did some 2-year-old math program? Yeah. I don't think,
Right.
Or, oh my goodness, I taught them to read at 3. I'm great. I just don't think that's going to make them an amazing writer later in life. They're going to either be that or they're not going to be that. But their ability to be humble, their ability to be kind, their ability to love, I think those are the things that we can really focus on. And some of those don't come about because we did Baby Einstein or we did this amazing program. Some of those come about because we had family dinners. Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. So I just think we have neglected some of the most important things because we're trying to curate and it's coming from a good place in parents. We're trying to do the best for our kids. But I want to say the best is to do things like take them to church, to have family dinners where you can pray together as a family, to talk about God's word. That's the best. And our world is selling us something that doesn't actually give life, which is they need a private tutor for baseball, they need an SAT, and all those things. I'm not saying those are bad. I'm just saying they're not the best thing for our kids.
Yeah. Well, I think this is why it's helpful to have that person who's the next level up. Because I think when you mentioned earlier that we don't remember things from a long time ago, what's interesting is that I think it's like when I talk to my parents, I'll say something like, hey, do you guys remember what it was like when I was two? And they're like, I don't remember anything. And at first I was kind of offended. and then I thought more of it and I realized, I mean, that was a long time ago. That was 40 years ago. And also, your attitude kind of becomes the Lord provided and he got us through. And, you know, we just learn to progress through that. You just have sort of a blessed remembrance of we made it through, but you don't really remember how. You don't remember. Mm-hmm. So you have to have both the broad perspective of, you know what, it's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. You're going to be okay. That's typically the ups and downs of the market. It generally will still rise. In other words, most of the time, your kids are still going to grow up. They're going to figure things out. Now, not always. There are sad incidents all kinds of different ways. But generally speaking, you shouldn't worry too much. Ultimately, though, the reason you don't worry is not just because it generally works out, but because it's all in the Lord's hands. And it seems like as you get older, that's a little bit more of you. What you realize was, well, the Lord sustained us by his grace. And then I think in some ways, the older you get, the dumber you realize that you were some ways too. You're like, oh, I did not have a clue what I was doing at that
Well,
point.
And that's the hope in the Lord. What I will say too, I think we can forget what life without Christ is like. Like,
yeah,
think,
that's a good point.
Like when I think about what a bad mom I would have been without the conviction of Scripture. Oof. You know, like that check on my response is my responsibility. Well, that's a Christian principle, right? Yeah. I mean, rather than, and so here's what I will say. You see a lot of older people who have no relationship with their children. They're bitter. They're angry. And I would say we really do forget that Christ is the foundation on which we have to build our homes. Yeah, and that's where, because just as we talk about, you know, you've heard a million wedding ceremonies where the pastor turns and says, you actually don't have it in you what you need to commit to this other person. Well, I would love to look at parents and be like, you don't have it in you to love this child in and of yourself. Your love will actually run dry. You need a bigger fount. You need a better love. And so by filling yourself with that love and then filling your home with the love of Christ, and that's just, it's just not what the world's pushing us towards. And I would say the biggest danger of the secular age is it's pushing us towards man-made solutions for spiritual problems. And so we have to fight against that by being in the Word, by being in prayer, being in church. It sounds so simple, but man, it's hard to live in practice in our world today.
Oh, you're opening up too many interesting places to go. This is why we need our own podcast someday. we'll talk through all these different things. So I'm going to restrain myself because otherwise we're going to end up at 90 minutes. Goodness. Okay, I'm going to ask this question. And I'm going to preface this last one. We're talking here with Melissa Kruger. I'm talking about parenting with hope, raising teens for Christ in a secular age. I'm going to preface that this last question is about me. It's not about you. So it's about me. I'm asking you for advice, but this is about me. Now, you, Melissa, in your experience, you've been exclusively focused at home. You've worked in your church. Now you have an extremely demanding job at TGC. I know the work that we do, it really affects my parenting, and it's not always in good ways. I mentioned an example earlier where it was a good way, what things I learned from Tim and Kathy, but there are other ways that it does not affect me in positive ways, just the stress and anxiety, things like that. The travel is certainly hard with having kids at that age. Sometimes definitely that the stress will bleed out with them. I think part of it is because of our remote work and that we're working online with a lot of things. There's not, you know, my wife's father was a surgeon, and you don't bring surgery home with you. It's there at the hospital. You're not doing that. at home. Very clear separation. That's not the case for us. And it's really not the case for anybody in ministry. I think the fact that my mom was a teacher and my dad was a farmer prepared me for ministry because there weren't a lot of boundaries between work. We literally lived at my father's work nonstop. And then my mother's work, she definitely brought home with her, literally and emotionally. So just saying with all that you're trying to balance here, for my advice, how do you keep hopeful as a parent who's also working long hours?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we do bring that stuff home. And I think what I'm hopeful about, even when I hear that, is I do believe our kids can handle better. Hey, daddy had a stressful day. And, you know, I know I just spoke harshly to you. And I'm sorry I did that. That they can actually handle that. What they can't handle is growing up thinking it was always their fault. You know,
yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yep. And so they can actually hear that. What I'm hopeful about is the truths of scripture that tell us ask forgiveness when you sin. Those truths, this sounds, it's not just pragmatic, but they actually work. Because I think a lot of kids grow up, you'll see this, especially in children of divorce, they think the divorce is their fault. So the reality is your young kids, when they see you angry and upset, and yeah, they see you looking at your phone and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm sure you're like, I can't believe that person said that about this. Yeah, I know. All the things that can, they think they did something wrong in that moment. They think daddy is, because they're inherently self-focused, right? Like you and I both know they had nothing to do with why you're upset or why you're tired or why you're weary. But they think in their minds, it had everything to do with them. So honestly, I think what I'm hopeful about is when growing up in a Christian home, kids, you actually have a place to say, one, I'm sorry, but you also have a right place not to dump your emotional baggage on your kid. But like I'm picturing at the family dinner table to say, hey, dad's really stressed about work. Hey, you know, Carter, will you pray for him? You know, to have these conversations and say, hey, will you pray for dad? Wow, he gets to be kind of like your brother at that moment. Yeah, come alongside. I'm going to pray for dad, you know, or whatever. And I've watched my kids do that. When I found out my mom's breast cancer was back, I was sitting at the table and my 16-year-old came in. She's like, you look sad, mom. And I was like, I am sad. You know, this happened. She was like, can I pray for you? Yeah, there's hope, right? There's not hope that we avoid the hard things. There's not hope that we avoid the stressors of life, but there's actual hope that we're equipping our kids for how to walk through them as we walk through them with them. And I find that really hopeful that the Christian message, the wisdom we've received is actually truth. And I've seen it and experienced. It's true. It works because that's how we're created to live and work.
I think it was last night I was trying to explain to William, age 2, that I was going to be gone for the next few days. I don't think this was all clicking with him. I think I did ask him to pray. I don't know what I was thinking, but I was trying to apply some of the principles there of like, well, I just want him to know that I need help and I want everything to go well at home when I'm gone and I'm sad when I have to leave him. I have this out of a pit in my stomach every time I head to the airport. And it's not because I'm not doing good things that the Lord has called our whole family to be able to do together, but it's still just hard to be able to do that. But I think you're right to kind of help the set a tone of the family participating, meaning that we've been called to do this together and that we're seeking to the Lord together for help. And that there are sacrifices and it is hard, but there are also blessings, many, many blessings that come from that. And I don't think that would be different even for anybody listening and watching. You may not be traveling as much as I do or Melissa does, but especially if you're a pastor, you still have those late nights. You've got those meetings, you've got those visitations, you've got those funerals, the vacations that are cut short, all of that sort of stuff. And so I like what you keep saying here, Melissa, that Let's just take it open-handed together, prayerfully before the Lord, instead of a culture of sort of secrecy and recrimination. I don't think that works very well, or a lack of self-awareness to realize. I mean, it actually took a long time, Melissa, for me to realize that my work was affecting myself around my family. Mm-hmm. It would have been blindingly obvious to everybody else, but I just didn't see that. So maybe if you're watching or listening, maybe you experienced the same thing there. You just might not be aware of that. Well, like I said, Melissa, we'll just have to keep this going on our own podcast at some point here. But in the meantime, your book, Parenting with Hope, Raising Teens for Christ in a Secular Age, I believe it's going to do a lot of good. And like you said, there's just not a lot out there like it. And I'm glad that you took the risk. And I knew you would do a great job of it because I've just seen you model that kind of wisdom with me and with many others over the years. So congrats on the book, and thanks for joining me on Gospel Bound.
Thanks for having me, Colin.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Gospel Bound. For more interviews and to sign up for my newsletter, head over to tgc.org/gospelbound. Rate and review Gospel Bound on your favorite podcast platform so others can join the conversation. Until next time, remember, when we're bound to the gospel, we abound in hope.